Prepare yourselves for Ethan and Aaron's Confessions of a Movie Snob, the ongoing discussion of film genres.
I don't know what to say. Boom! I'm Aaron.
I'm Ethan.
And I'm Chad.
Well, shit, Chad's just jumping right in there.
I know.
Yeah.
I like our other guests. He's you know, they hold back.
They hold back?
Well, I need no like, introduction boom, from
boom
Aaron.
Boomstick. Both barrels right out the door.
Boom! Podcast. Boom! Ethan. Boom! Guest. What's your name, guest?
My name is Chad, and I have manipulated a lot of what you've heard so far, but this is the first time you're going to hear me talk.
He controls the vertical. He controlled the horizontal.
It's not the first time that we've heard you talk. That's the first time you've guessed it in.
I don't think anybody would remember.
Well, no, because... no, just because no. 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 But like we said at the end of last week, tonight we're going to be topical for the third time in a year, just like a cream. Apply evenly.
Yep.
But what we're doing is today is Wednesday, some date in February. I don't know what the fuck the date is.
It's the 25th of January.
25th of January, whatever month this is. I don't even know.
Do you even know what a calendar is?
Calendar. Is there an app for that?
Yes. Yes, there is.
I should download that. 25th of January, and so that means that yesterday, the 24th of January, gave us the nominations for the, what is it, 84th Annual Academy. I don't know a goddamn thing, but we decided that we're just going to, well, obviously we'll talk about that when we get into our news, but that's also going to be the bulk of our discussion tonight, where we're going to be doing our top list of our favorite best pitchers in the well, so far, 83 years of the Academy Awards, because this year's has not been named off yet, so we can't really just pick one of those. So,
but we could, and we're going to at some point. But.
Yeah, but before we get into any of that, we have a segment that we like to call...
Geekly Happenings, news that's relevant to us geeks, featuring reactions by Aaron.
What happened this week, Ethan?
Stuff happened this week.
Holy stuff.
Three different projects have lost actors in the last couple days.
Oh, yeah?
I know we reported on Lily Collins, the star of the upcoming Mirror Mirror, was going to be in Evil Dead, first cast one. She had to drop out of the lead role of TriStar's Evil Dead remake due to scheduling issues, quote-unquote.
Huh.
So apparently it's no big, you know, no, like, she hates everybody and wants Sam Raimi to get gonorrhea of the eye and die.
Sure.
It was just scheduling. So, you know, there you go.
Yeah, or it could be she doesn't have time in her schedule to do a shitty movie that isn't going to pay her enough.
Who knows? That. Hey, work is work, really.
Yeah.
And Javier Bardem, who was in negotiations to voice the villain in Universal and Illumination's Despicable Me 2.
This time it's a person.
Had to drop out. He was going to voice a villain called El Macho.
That's Spanish for the macho.
Why do you say had to drop out? He didn't have to. He chose. He doesn't want to do it.
He doesn't want to do it, or he's got some other option coming up. It doesn't say, obviously. But
he's not going to do it.
From the article I read, it looked like he just was not happy with everything.
It might be that, too. And the other third one is Demi Moore, who, you know, we all know needs
Lovelace.
Lots of work. Had to drop out of Lovelace, yes.
Because she's
the Linda Lovelace biopic Lovelace. She was going to play women's rights activist Gloria Steinem.
Yeah, she had to go to rehab.
Yep.
Oh, no, God. No.
Her daddy said she was fine.
Oh, my Lord.
And that film's going to star Amanda Seyfried, Peter Sarsgaard, Sharon Stone, and others.
Huh. I cannot wait to not see that.
So,
who knows? It might be great.
Yeah. Another follow-up to something we've talked about in the past is The Crow reboot.
Yeah, I saw this.
It's out of litigation and has signed a writer and director.
Did we ever talk the litigation on the show?
We did.
Okay,
very briefly.
Because we mentioned that
it was in litigation.
I saw that it came out of litigation.
Yeah.
But I don't think I remembered that it was in litigation.
The Weinstein Company was being sued by Relativity Media over it, and apparently the lawsuit between Relativity Media and the Weinstein Company concerning The Crow has been amicably settled out of court, and the parties will continue to work on the film together as planned.
See, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. They also signed a writer and a director.
Mm-hmm.
They closed a deal with F. Javier Gutierrez, who did Before the Fall.
Cool.
To direct the reinvention of The Crow.
Is that the title?
Yes, exactly. It's the reinvention of The Crow. And writer Jesse Wigetow has been signed to pen the script. So, I know for a while, what's his name was attached to being it.
Juan Fresno Presidelia, I think was his name.
There's that. No, I'm talking the star.
Oh, Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, Bradley Cooper, but he bowed out last, during the summer.
I don't know if it was because of that or because of the Paradise Lost action movie that's coming out that he's playing Satan in, but.
Maybe. And let's see, Liam Neeson actually was quoted as far as his scene for The Dark Knight Rises.
He's like, I was there for an hour and a half. I have no idea what I was doing, so don't ask me.
He said, and I quote, "I can tell you nothing about Dark Knight Rises." Seriously, Neeson told Showbiz Spy. "I was on set for maybe an hour and a half, and the director didn't tell me anything of what it's about. So I'm being very honest when I say I have no idea what's going to happen." I think this is Liam fucking Neeson's way of saying, stop asking me about it, goddammit.
Uh-huh. Are we going to talk about the girl that spilled the beans and got lots of trouble, or?
I wasn't, but.
Okay, should we? Maybe I'll just edit this out or something.
I know what you're talking. We talk about it. It is mentioned, I think, on the Bag and Boardcast we hijacked.
Uh huh. I still can't wait to hear that, or yes. I'm terrified to hear that. Also,
yes. In other news, we were on Bag and Boardcast. What one was that? 110.
Yeah.
Yeah, we hijacked it.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. It's probably not very fun to listen to.
So, if you want to hear the news about the girl who spilled the beans. You want to go there.
There you go. How about that?
We're doing some cross-plugging.
Cross-plugging.
And Zack Snyder's Man of Steel has added another famous character from the Superman mythos to the production, albeit in a younger form than fans might have been expecting. Superman Supersite confirmed that 13-year-old Jaden Gould will play a young Lana Lang in a flashback scene to Clark Kent's Smallville childhood.
Huh, gross.
I know. And speaking of Smallville, we mentioned last week that the CW was working on a
lots of shows
a Green Arrow pilot or Green Arrow series, and we got the official word that it will not have anything to do with Smallville. That
cool.
It's its own entity.
Well, that's good, but that's not necessarily a grand slam. I mean, just because it's not directly connected doesn't mean it's not going to suck.
Yeah.
It is CW.
And Josh Hartley, or whatever his name, Jason Hartley, whoever the guy was who played him in Smallville.
Oh, yeah, Justin Hartley.
Justin Hartley, it was something. Is not being...
Good.
Is not going to be doing the roles.
I should do it.
They aren't asking him. Yes, Aaron, you should do it.
I should do it.
How old is he now?
I have no idea. He's probably almost 30.
He's probably almost my age.
Yeah, he's gotta be our age. I was going to think mid... or
old as fuck.
30s.
And Aaron, I'm sure you know... Star Wars Episode One: Phantom Menace comes out February 10th in 3D.
I didn't realize it was that soon.
Yeah, February 10th. Neither did I until I saw this article. Huh. But AMC Theaters has announced exclusive activities and giveaways for February 10th release of Star Wars Episode One: The Phantom Menace 3D. They are at 3D theaters as long as you...
Digital 3D. I mean, I'm sorry, the film 3D theaters, like the ones that are nowhere near us?
No. Okay. Well, this is AMC Theaters who's doing it.
Okay.
And, you know, hopefully AMC isn't going to drop the ball again because, you know, they're out of Kansas City.
Yep.
They are going to be people who come see to mark the return of Star Wars Episode One: The Phantom Menace to theaters now in immersive 3D. Kids, collectors, and Star Wars fans of all ages will receive an all-new Hasbro Star Wars fighter pod with purchase of each real 3D ticket for Episode One all week long, February 10th. All week long, February 10th to 12th, only at AMC Theaters. Limit one per ticket while supplies last. They're going to have special 3D glasses that look like Anakin's goggles.
Huh. That sounds uncomfortable.
I doubt that they strap to your head.
I guess that, okay, whatever. That's cool, though. I'm going to see it, so.
Oh, yeah.
I just had no idea it was that soon. I mean,
no, I thought it was going to be probably later in the summer.
I did, too.
Oh, well. I guess I don't have to drag Beth to see it. So.
I have a sneaking suspicion that the episode twos and threes and shit aren't going to happen anyway.
Oh, yeah, that'd be too bad.
It would be too bad, but, you know.
I'm a fan of the Danny Kaye film, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Hell, I am, too.
Kristen Wiig is planning a Secret Life of Walter Mitty. She's going to be in the remake. Have you heard anything about this?
No.
Okay, Kristen Wiig.
Maybe I did.
Kristen Wiig looks likely to play the female lead in 20th Century Fox's upcoming remake of The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Who did I hear they were?
The Hollywood Reporter has a story saying that The Bridesmaid star is currently in negotiations. The film will both star and be directed by Ben Stiller.
Yes,
His first directorial project since 2008's Tropic Thunder, which is one of my favorite comedies.
Me too. It's one of my favorite movies.
And it's obviously a remake of the 1947 Danny Kaye movie. Mm-hmm. The movie was based on a James Thurber's short story published in 1939, and the current version of the film will feature a script from Steve Conrad, best known for The Pursuit of Happiness and The Weatherman. I'm interested in it. It's, one, I love the original. I'm interested in it because it's written, directed and starring Ben Stiller, and I mean
he's pretty good.
I really like Tropic Thunder.
I do too. So I mean he's
if anyone else was doing it, you know, depending on who else was doing it, since he's doing it, I'm
and if it was like, you know, Jonah Hill, you'd be like, fuck that.
I'm curious if it's still going to be a musical though.
I hope so.
That'd be nice. I mean, the original's fun. I used to really like that when I was a kid.
I still like that. I don't have to be a kid. Have you seen it, Chad?
I have not seen it.
Good movie. Do you know who Danny Kaye was? Well, you're young. But, you know, we were almost too young for him even, because he died in early... I know this is horrible, but he died in early seasons, like first season, second season of The Cosby Show, because he was on an episode and he died shortly after that. And I remember it was when Rudy was really little, so that was early 80s. So, but yeah, he was a comedian. He was a...
was a movie star.
He was maybe a Jim Carrey. I mean, he was obviously way more intelligent, way more... Well, and Jim Carrey can be good, but... I don't know. I just always thought of Danny Kaye as a bit more dignified. He was a high class movie star. He was awesome. I liked him a lot. But I'm certainly gonna keep my.
He died in 1987.
Yeah, so it's been a while. But he, I'll keep my eyes out for this because I like the original and I do enjoy a lot of things that Ben Stiller does. Mm-hmm. So it could be good.
And I know you're also a big fan of BBC's Sherlock.
I am.
Well, did you know that CBS is planning their own Sherlock series called Elementary?
Yes, and I also know that Stephen Moffat is none too happy about
it. No, the BBC is none too happy, and the BBC has said...
Stephen Moffat's screaming about it on Twitter.
Yes. well, now the producer, one of the exec producers on the BBC Sherlock is also commenting on it. Exec producer Sue Vertue... told The Independent that her team was actually approached by CBS to create a licensed U.S. version of Sherlock a while back, but they turned the U.S. network down. Not soon after, CBS announced Elementary was in development. She said, "We understand that CBS are looking at their own version of an updated Sherlock Holmes," she said. "It's interesting as they approached us a while back about remaking our show. At the time, they made great assurances about their integrity, so we have to assume that their modernized Sherlock Holmes doesn't resemble ours in any way, as that would be extremely worrying." If there's too much of a resemblance, Virtue noted that that every recourse would be taken and hinted that even that could even mean a potential lawsuit against CBS. She said, quote, "We are very proud of our show, and like any proud parent, will protect the interest and well-being of our offspring," she said. So...
You know, I don't want to stand contrarian, you know, because I think I spent enough time last episode talking about my thoughts on that, but I just don't like this idea. I mean, first off, it's CB fucking ass, and I don't mean that in a positive way. They don't make good stuff, and the BBC Sherlock, as far as I'm concerned, it's flawless, as far as I'm concerned.
It's a good show.
It's a flawless. I love that show
I'm really
much.
Putting off watching that last episode, because then I know I'll be done with it for a while.
Now, they have officially announced that there is a third season.
That's good.
Yeah, and Martin...
It's really fucking good
Martin show. Freeman says he will do it, and Benedict Cumberbatch has said he wants to do it. So, we'll have to see what happens there.
Yeah, so it depends on schedules and all that stuff. So,
but
if Cumberbatch can't do it, I don't want him to. I want him to wait for him. Honestly, I want him for everyone to come back.
Yeah, I mean, it's just too good of a show to really. Well, you know, they did it with the Jeremy Brett stuff. You know, they replaced
Watson.
It was Watson though. So.
But we're talking Sherlock. Holmes himself. Yeah, you know? When Brett died, they stopped doing the show.
Right, it's a good show.
So I mean, yeah. I got a few brief ones before we jump into things.
Big news.
I saw... I liked The Expendables.
Yes, you did.
It was a fun movie. Expendables 2 is coming out, and it's been confirmed for PG-13 rating.
Huh.
Apparently, this was a condition to get Chuck Norris in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Norris saw it, read the script, and basically said, I'll do it, but you need to cut all this stuff. You need to cut all of the profanity down.
He's not even the big bad guy, is he?
No, I don't think so.
No, that's Van Damme. Van Damme's the bad guy in it.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't know.
So, hey?
You know.
I'm looking forward to it. I like the first one.
Don't know. I mean, it just depends on what Chuck Norris is going to add to it. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I guess I don't have anything fundamentally against a PG-13 movie. It just I don't like the idea of, you know, like he's part of a huge ensemble cast, and he's dictating stuff for everybody, and I think that's fucked up.
But I got nothing.
Morality.
The other little brief bit is PJ Hogan was hired to direct Jeff Smith's The Bone movie, based on the comic book series Bone.
Yep.
And we talked a bit about that on
Bag and Boardcast.
On Bag and Boardcast.
We did.
So go over there and listen to our conversation there, I guess.
And when I said then, and I was probably like, I probably didn't articulate it well because
you were you were hammered.
I was definitely feeling some alcohol, but it was, the Bone logo, like the comic book cover logo, was the original impetus for the Red Phone Zone text logo.
Yeah, it was the inspiration.
Yep, it was the inspiration, so...
Last bit I had before we get into some Oscar stuff is we mentioned that Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg were planning on doing their third installment of the Blood and Ice Cream. Isn't that what they're calling it? Blood and Ice Cream?
Yeah, the Coronado Trilogy or Blood and Ice Cream.
Yeah, the Coronado Trilogy called World's End. Uh-huh. Well, Edgar Wright tweeted a picture of himself and Simon Pegg standing in front of a whiteboard with the title on it, The World's End, which is the title of the movie they're working on, and he just said, working hard on it now. So
so they wrote it on a blackboard.
So
all right,
the two of them are theoretically working on it at this point. So,
cool, I can't wait.
That makes me happy because...
I like the first two.
God damn, yes, those first two are great fucking movies. Yep.
All right, check this out, guys. Theo Angelopoulos died today at 76.
He did.
Did you guys read about that?
Yes.
Apparently it was a big deal in Greece.
Yes.
Eternity in a Day, if anybody... That'd probably be the only movie anybody's seen of his.
He died yesterday, Theo Angelopoulos. He was... did he die in a car crash or hit by a car?
No, he was on set and got hit by a runaway motorcycle.
Okay, I know he got hit by something, and he was a... he was an indie film...
And after Gene Hackman gets hit by a bus.
Yeah, this guy... Yeah, he's no Gene Hackman. He was awesome. He's awesome, but he's no Gene
Hackman. Got back up.
Yeah, he got back up and punched the bus.
we're pretty certain he beat the bus up afterwards.
Well, apparently his wife produces all these movies that he directs.
Yeah, Theo Angelopoulos. Yeah, he was... Do you remember the indie boom in the early 90s?
Yeah.
He was one of those people, but he was more of a... He wasn't as loud as your Kevin Smiths or your people like that. He made some... decent movies. It sucks that he's dead. I'll definitely say that. But yeah, he did.
And one more thing. At Sundance, I read there's a horror movie called VHS.
Yep.
And it's one of those shaky films, you know, found VHS, this is what happened, ideas. And some guy passed out at it about early into the film.
Uh-huh.
So this always happens like
from
once a year.
Motion sickness?
Yeah, motion sickness. They said there was pretty gory when it happened, too. Like, it was...
Oh.
But... Every time you hear this happening, you have to go see that movie.
Apparently.
It's scary.
Well, you know, they did it with Alien, I guess, but no.
If we're going to be talking...
I don't get motion sick, so, I mean, I'll probably check it out, but I know some people just can't see things like that.
Like the Blair Witch Project bothered a lot of people.
It bothered me, too. Nothing like that. It was just a dumb movie. Yeah.
Well, I mean, because it's shaky and shit. Or is it just too stupid for you to get?
Well, yeah.
So
yes,
maybe I'm too stupid to understand how deep it was.
How deep it was?
Yeah.
Oh God.
The minutia of the artiste. In
sure. Why not? If we're gonna talk people who precede us, this one's kind of sad. Actor, veteran actor, whatever you want to call him, Nicol Williamson passed away today. I think it was. It seemed like I read it was pancreatic cancer or something like that. The name isn't going to jump out to a lot of people, but if you saw him, you would know him. The thing that I think that people that would listen to this show might know him best for is he was the guy that played a Cagliostro in Spawn, in the live-action Spawn movie.
Okay, that's probably the only thing I've ever seen him in. Yeah,
well, he was a voice in Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. He was Father Morning in The Exorcist Part 3.
Ooh.
He was in Return to Oz. He played the Gnome King.
I blocked that movie from my mind. It gave me nightmares as a child.
Yep. The big one, the one that everybody knows him from, was 1981 Excalibur. He played Merlin.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
I never finished that movie, so...
Pretty good movie. He was in The Goodbye Girl. That's a almost Oscar winner, but yeah. Did you see the 1968 of Mice and Men? The one where they completely fucked up, or they
I've only seen the John Malkovich Gary Sinise one. I think
That's a good one. But this is the one where they like went so far as to like name Curly's wife because they thought it was weird that the character didn't have a name in the book. And I'm like, good God, you people don't even know how to read Cliff Notes. I mean, that was the point. She was objectified. The only thing she was Curly's wife. He played Lenny in that version. He did some PBS stuff. I remember he played Hamlet, and he played King Lear, stuff like that. So, sucks. But, you know, people die sometimes.
Yes, they do. Mm. And that's one thing I look forward to at the Oscars is the...
people dying.
The in memoriam.
Yeah, those always pit. Well, I never liked those because, well, I mean, I like them because I want to, you know, give my thanks to those who passed that I like. But there's almost always somebody there that I wasn't aware of that, you know, always kind of throws me through a loop. I see what you're doing. You're trying to heavy hand a segue into there.
I am.
So stay tuned. We'll be right back with our discussion about the Academy Awards and the best picture winners and our favorites amongst them. Joined tonight, as we were talking, and he was in Geekly Happening, so the intro is kind of pointless. But it is Soundman Chad, as we said before. He edited our shows from issue 20, I think it was 27, 26, up until recently when his computer crapped out on him. And I told him about the new equipment we got, and he decided that he wanted to be part of the show for the first time. So welcome, Chad.
I don't know if that was an introduction to me or to the equipment you bought.
Hey, we did.
Yes, are you more proud? We're welcoming our guest, the new mixer.
The new mixer.
But, oh, that's rough.
But the new mixer was on last week, and it had a proper introduction.
That never really stopped us. We've had McG on a couple weeks in a row.
Yeah, that's true. But
Chad's here.
He said that he wanted to be in. He wanted to try to get on one of these shows. And when it came time to realize that Ethan and I were going to be talking some Best Picture winners, that's one of the ideas I threw out at Chad, and he seemed at least relatively receptive to.
Okay, I am underqualified to do this right now.
Okay.
I promise that. But I have seen quite a few of the Best Picture movies.
Now, how many have you seen?
I would say I've seen 22.
Okay.
And of the available 83.
And I've seen 83 of them.
I've seen 31.
And Ethan, yeah, and I'm the freak, but I actively tried to do this, and it took me a decade. Mm-hmm. I mean, I actually just got the last one crossed off it was right before last Oscar season, so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and to woefully underscore this, I haven't seen any of the movies that are nominated for this year.
And I've seen one. Two. I've seen two.
I've only seen one.
Ethan's only seen one. I've only seen two.
It's my mission to watch all the Best Picture nominees before the Oscars.
And I'm gonna say right now that there's gonna be some pains for me in there because
and for me,
I'm not a Terrence Malick fan.
I'm not a Martin Scorsese or a Woody Allen fan. So.
I can, you know, Woody Allen I can write off as he's quirky Woody Allen, and he's not for me. Martin Scorsese, I just think that, and I get your grievances with Woody Allen, but I just think, I'm sorry, not with Martin Scorsese, because
I recognize that he's a good filmmaker. It's just I've never seen anything I liked him,
and I haven't seen him do some. I haven't ever seen him do a film that I would call flawless. Like the closest would be Mean Streets, and that's fucking a million years old.
I mean, I don't want people to take away from this thing. I don't like Scorsese being, oh, fuck him, he's horrible.
Yeah.
No,
I still like his movies.
I've given him a chance, you know, countless times.
And we talked We talked the hell out of this last week anyway.
Doesn't,
so
doesn't do anything for me.
Wait, so who do you guys think are gonna who's gonna win?
What who's picture? Gonna win?
I gotta watch them.
I don't have to watch them.
But it's popular opinion. It's not your opinion. Yeah, who is gonna win? Who do you think should win?
I don't know. I don't know much of the buzz right now. I haven't really looked into it.
I think the artist is gonna take a picture. And I think director will either go to.
If I had to base it off of buzz right now, I mean, The Descendants is getting a lot of the buzz, but and that's just popular buzz.
Yeah, but it's
people look at it and go, "What's well, it's an Oscar movie."
People
with
look at this
George Clooney in it. So,
people look at The Descendants and they say it's really well acted, and it did win the Golden Globe. I'm not going to discount it, and I haven't seen it, but right now, to me, the buzz is behind the artist, and getting into the Oscar nominations, there's all kinds of statistics that you can look into about what's going to win what, and one of the key not always, I mean it especially lately they've been really messing with the way things work for a couple of years now, but one of the key things that always seems to play into it is I think it was at one point it was in the 70s or 80% that the picture with the most nominations takes best picture like a good percentage of the time, and by that rationale it's going to be Hugo.
Yeah, Hugo's got 11 nods.
The artist has 10 and I just don't see Martin Scorsese winning for Hugo.
Yeah. I think Academy members are going to look at it. Well, we gave him one for The Departed just a couple of years ago, so we're not.
I thought Scorsese himself said that this was a total shock that it was even in the running. Now is he being modest or is that for real?
Probably both. Because I think that Martin Scorsese a long time gave up hope that he would ever win an Oscar, and he won one. He's like, fucking right on. But I also think that Martin Scorsese thinks highly of himself.
Yeah.
My thing about it is, when I look at the Oscar nominations this year, we got 9 nominees. I'm not going to read them all off. You guys can go to Oscars.org or there's probably a multitude of websites out there that has the full list. But as far as I'm concerned, the best picture race is going to be coming down to two. It's going to be down between Hugo, and it's going to be down between The Artist. Mm-hmm. And there's one thing about the Oscars is they're always trying to say something, with their choices. And this year it looks like old versus new. I mean, you have the cutting edge of 3D made by a master filmmaker, and then you have something as simple as a mostly silent picture in The Artist. And they're also both about filmmaking, and they want to pat themselves on the back because they all work in film in some capacity or another. Personally, right now, I'm thinking The Artist. I'm just going to need to see more award shows, because that's always going to color my opinion. But if I had to say right now, I'd say The Artist is going to take picture. Probably, I can never remember his name, but Michael something French, I don't know, I can't pronounce it. He might actually end up taking director, because I know last year at the Golden Globes there was a split there as well, because last year at the Golden Globes, pitcher went to no, there wasn't a split last year. Excuse me, pitcher went to
The King's Speech.
No, it went to The King's Speech, and it went to The Social Network. Or I'm sorry, it went to The Social Network.
Oh, that's right.
And it went to, I would need to look, and I haven't looked at this, and I didn't even watch the Golden Globes last year, so I can't remember. But last year, the Golden Globes awarded the Social Network a lot more, and then the Academy came around, 2 months later, and it really laid it on with the King's Speech really thick.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of this year's Oscars, we'll get into our conversation as quickly as we can. Like with every year, there's some sense of omission. There's some cool stuff that's happened. And the coolest thing that happened this year is Gary Oldman is, at least at this point, at very least, an Oscar nominee.
I know, about damn time.
Yeah, well, you know what really irritates me?
I don't think he's been nominated before.
No, he hasn't. He has not. And this is
which is a sad omission.
It is a sad omission, but it's gone. I was actually on IMDb, and I said, and you know how you can put the thing, and I don't like message boards. Why the fuck I ever get involved in them is beyond me.
Yeah.
But I said something just as simple as, congratulations, Mr. Oldman, on your first Oscar nomination. And somebody came back with, you fucking dumbass, he won for Dracula. I'm like, hey, no, he didn't. And Yeah. B, what the fuck? He's like, no, I'm sure he did. And why don't we compound this with the fact that we are on IMDb. Yeah. Right up there, you could click on Gary Oldman and see his award. And it was frustrating, but I'm very pleased.
Like, he was really fucking good in Dracula, yeah, but he did not get an Oscar for it.
He, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the one he should have got his Oscar, I mean, a nomination definitely for would have been maybe Immortal Beloved.
Yeah, Immortal Beloved. And that's one he did right after Dracula.
Yeah. Either that or JFK. That would have been a superb.
Yeah, I sort of blocked JFK out of my mind.
Yeah, you don't like Oliver Stone either.
Well, that movie was boring as hell.
I like JFK, okay, but it's too long. But yeah, he played Lee Harvey Oswald, and it would have been a good supporting actor nod.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long it's been since I saw that movie, but no, I love Gary Oldman. I'm so happy that mm-hmm. he finally at least has a nomination.
Yeah.
And we've been saying it, with him as Jim Gordon in Batman, mm-hmm. and just how fantastic he is. I mean, I nominated him for Ruth Oz.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now, it's going to be another nomination for him down the road.
Sure.
From me,
if he doesn't,
he's fantastic.
So. I'd like to see him pull this one off and get it. I don't see it happening because mm-hmm. this was a you know finger marks in the air shocker that he got nominated. It was for Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, which mm-hmm. I can't say for some reason. He wasn't nominated.
So I'm looking forward to watch that. I am too.
And it's also got Benedict Cumberbatch and Colin
Mark
Firth,
Strong.
Mark Strong. I mean, it's got a hell of a cast.
Yeah, it's got a really nice cast.
The biggest cinema mission this year is, at least the thing that I see everybody talking about, the big thing that jumps out at me is the lack of
that guy from Walking Dead didn't get nominated.
Yeah, goddamn it!
Oh,
they have something against little people. That and he wasn't in a theatrical movie. But no, it was the snubbing of Tintin for animated feature. It won the Golden Globe,
mm-hmm.
and it's Edward Douglas, friend of the show, said on his Twitter feed, this just proves his point that the Academy voters hate mocap.
Yeah.
You're probably right. I mean, in terms of that, but I haven't seen Tintin.
Neither have I. I've heard it's good.
I've heard it's good, but my thing about
it is, with the team behind it, it ought to be good.
Yeah, it better be good. Yeah. Peter Jackson, Steven Spielberg, what else?
Edgar Wright, Steven Moffat.
Yeah, else do you need? But it's too bad. Something that I said about it was, yeah, that's true. The Academy doesn't like mocap, but it's also a largely, and not entirely, but a largely American body.
Oh,
And Tintin is way more popular and famous everywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that could be another thing.
I mean, would you say Tintin here, people go, Rin Tintin?
Rin Tintin? Oh, the dog. Yeah, no, you idiot. Yeah. Also in the same category, I'm not going to call it a sin of a mission, but it's noteworthy. No Pixar nomination.
Yep, no Pixar nomination for Best Picture. First film they've done since
Since the inception of the award.
Yeah.
Because
I think Cars was nominated, the first one.
Yes.
So, yeah. It's the first time they have not been nominated.
Yeah.
I think even Bug's Life was nominated.
Bug's Life or Toy Story. Bug's Life was nominated.
Yeah.
Toy Story was not because they didn't have the award at the time.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. That's a big deal there. There's a bunch. I mean, depending on how you look at it, you can say, oh, my God, it's bullshit that Christopher Lee didn't get nominated for being Christopher Lee, like as far in terms of sense of a mission, everybody can have.
Speaking
them.
Of which, have they announced anything about a lifetime achievements this year?
Yes.
Who's getting a lifetime achievement?
I don't remember off the top of my head, but I know one of them is Oprah Winfrey. I would have to look it up, and I don't really feel like getting into it. I know, and it was it's a controversy. I mean, it's a controversial thing.
Give it to Christopher fucking Lee.
Yeah, give it to Christopher fucking Lee. He's not looking well, unfortunately.
And he needs something.
Fuck the knighthood. He wants an Oscar. He's got a BAFTA fellowship. The dude, he wants for nothing. I'm not saying I don't want him to get it, because I do. But thing about the Oscars is everybody's got a fucking opinion about the Oscars.
Yep. Case in point, we're doing a podcast on it.
Poison. Well, we did last year, too.
That's true.
It's our second annual podcast about the Oscars. And actually, technically, our third annual.
Yeah.
Because we also talked about it with the Avatar thing right after that, and then King's Speech.
And
then,
now,
so it's our third annual. Right. Weird. We haven't been doing the show for 2 years, and we have. Anyway.
Yep. Yeah, our 2-year anniversary is coming up.
It was something that, when we were leading out of last week and we were talking about doing this, Christopher McLaughlin, McGee, was, kind of making, hoity-toity snort noises, like, why would I want to do that? And, there is this yuckiness, I guess would be the word that mm-hmm. kind of is applied to the Oscars. And, the thing that everybody likes to say is they like to say, well, just because they may say it's the best picture of the year doesn't mean it's the best picture of the year. And I think that's kind of hilarious that people say that, because they're not saying it's the best picture of the year. They're saying that this body says it's the best picture of the year.
Yeah.
And I also find this, we often talk about difficulties of lists here. We always say that. This was difficult on some aspects for me and really simple for me on other aspects. It was difficult because there's so many really good films in this category. But it was easy because, I have 74 or 73 to choose from. And that's it. There's no, arguing that Saving Private Ryan is on this list. It should have been, but it's not. It did not win Best Picture. And I'm going to say right now that my list would be completely different if some of the movies that I felt were best movies of the year won when they didn't, like Saving Private Ryan, Citizen Kane.
Well, now
you're
just talking about your favorite movies of all time.
Which we've done.
Yes.
So, which is what we're doing here, is we're going to be talking about our top six favorite of the Best Picture winners. Anything to add before we get into this, either of you two guys?
I for one call the Academy Awards season, Academy Awards is sort of my Super Bowl.
Yep.
I love them. It's a lot of fun. Yes, people go on about how it's Hollywood patting itself on the back for this or that, and it's award season. And I know I generally have only seen one, if even that, of the Best Picture nominees. And as far as the Oscars this year, it's on February 26th.
Something like that, yeah.
And it's
27th, I think.
27th, something like that. It's that Sunday.
Yeah.
And I think it starts at 6 or 7. 6 here.
Really?
I think, yeah.
Okay.
6 here.
Okay.
It is always entertaining to see. And I think a few things that I noticed were interesting, that only two songs were nominated for Best Song.
Mm-hmm. First time that's ever happened.
I mean, it's gone from 5 to 3 and now just to 2.
Oh, and there was lots of good songs that they could have picked from. There's lots of artists that Elton John wasn't included. Doesn't that hurt your funny bone, Aaron?
What should he have been nominated for?
Well, I don't know. I already used, he did some score for some movie.
Well,
he did. Yeah. But same with Madonna. She won the Golden Globe and didn't get nominated.
Yeah. There are two songs nominated for Best Song. One is from Rio, and the other one is from The Muppets.
Right.
And I think it's pretty clear to me that The Muppets is going to win.
I disagree. I think Rio's going to win.
See, I don't.
You know.
Think so.
You know why? Because I want The Muppets to win.
Oh, well,
but I also think it was one of the weaker songs in their movie. I mean, it was a good
song. It's a good song, but yeah, it's really, in the last couple of years, it's been really becoming a throwaway category.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ever since, I think, freaking
South Park.
Well, yeah, South Park and
3-6 Mafia 1.
3-6 Mafia 1 and Eminem 1. I think.
Oh,
people...
fuck you. Eminem's a talented musician.
Sure, but that being said, people were pissed off that he won an Oscar.
People were more pissed that 3-6 Mafia won.
Well, yeah,
they were furious. The thing that everybody's complaint about Eminem winning was the same stuff that happened whenever he won a Grammy or anything like that. It was like, he's talking about bad stuff. And, like, that's what the movie called for, especially that movie.
I just think the guy's a douchebag.
Oh, he's a douchebag, but he's a really talented musician.
Yeah, sure.
Like him, Chad?
Are we talking about Eminem?
Yeah.
Yes.
Talented musician's a little bit of lush title.
he's a talented rapper, whatever you want to call him.
Anyway. But I found that interesting. There's only two music nods. And I think, I don't remember if they did this last year, but they extended the visual effects to 5.
Yep. I don't remember about last year.
It used to be 3, and now it's 5.
And Captain America isn't one of them.
And I am upset that Captain America didn't get a visual effects nod, because I thought the visual effects in that were just amazing.
As I said on Facebook, upset, yes. Surprised, no.
Yeah. I think some of the ones they put
in there...
They
were too subtle. Probably,
but I thought that was the good thing.
I agree with you. And they go for the boom there,
Yeah, and the Transformers 3 got a nomination for visual effects, and I was, that was nothing new to me. And so, that was my only sort of, when I was reading through the nominations list, and my only knee jerk going, oh well, that's kind of crappy. Mm-hmm. But other than that, nothing stood out. I do want to talk, though, about when they were reading out the nominations for and they talked Jonah Hill.
That was funny.
Jonah Hill, the guy who Aaron would have play me in a movie, apparently.
That was Rachel.
Or Rachel would have play me in a movie. Was
nominated
for Moneyball. And it's very...
There's an audible chuckle.
There's an audible chuckle from the peanut gallery.
Yeah.
From the reporters that are present at the awards nominations.
Very telling.
And I think that's just amusing. I agree with you that it's very telling. There's no way in hell he's going to win.
No, but that's the win there. The win is that he got the nomination. It was the same thing with...
Well, it shows that he can act. But, I mean, a comedian's... can surprise you and they can act, you know.
Well, I mean, it was the same thing with lead dude from Social Network last year.
Yeah,
that's what I said last year. It was the victory, because who the hell thought that guy would ever get an Oscar nomination? Yeah. Same thing with Jonah Hill. I haven't seen Moneyball yet, but I've been in rooms where I've been playing and I've seen the trailers and he seems okay.
I mean, it seems like what it looks like to me is a movie that's probably a good movie, but not a movie made for me.
Probably.
But I have seen Moneyball.
Uh-huh. Is he any good?
And it's well done. And
so you have seen one of the nominees.
Yeah, that's up for Best Picture, dude.
And I don't think it was the Best Picture
of
the year.
Yeah. The only one I've seen was War Horse, and it's not Best Picture either.
Yeah.
But it was a very good movie, and it appeals to me.
Mm-hmm.
I like baseball. But I can see how you guys wouldn't watch it. But if you do watch it, I think you'll enjoy it.
I do want to see it because, like, I'm not a... Look at my flab. I'm not a sports guy.
Yeah.
But I like some sports movies. Like, effectively, I like boxing movies, but, you know...
Well, no, generally football movies suck, but I did like Any Given Sunday. Wasn't bad.
I thought you didn't like any Oliver Stone movies.
I didn't say that. I love Platoon.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Huh. No, it's just, for the most part, the guy's a preachy...
Oh, he is.
Preachy
he is.
Prick, but... Sure. Any Given Sunday was good, and Friday Night Lights wasn't bad.
That's when Any Given Sunday was when Jamie Foxx started showing up on people's serious radar. Because people knew him from that show he did with Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
In Living Color. But, you know, that was when people actually started taking him seriously. So, mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
That was also around the time when Dennis Quaid was not the kiss of death for movies.
Right.
But... No, and the other surprise to me was Bridesmaids getting a
pretty good movie,
a supporting nod and a writing nod. I was like, really?
Well,
I should actually see that.
You didn't like
Hangover. I thought Hangover was stupid.
It
looked to me like it was the female Hangover.
It is the female Hangover, but I don't know.
Two Oscar nominations make me at least interested in seeing it at this point.
Shakespeare in Love won Best Picture from these people. So I think you should I think you should just go with your gut on this. I don't think you'd like it. But
okay. But that's all I really want to talk about.
I think Beth would love it though.
Probably.
Yeah. I think she would love it. Okay.
Saving Private Ryan is so much better.
It was. Then
isn't that the one where you broke your sister's TV?
Yes. Nice. Yes. That was the first year I was really taking the Oscars seriously. I thought that the Shakespeare Saving Private Ryan had it in the bag, and they called out that it was Shakespeare in Love one, and I had like a can of Coke. It was like a full can of Coke. I was like, son of a bitch, and I threw it at the TV and broke my sister's TV with a can of Coke. Wasn't cool.
Did you have to buy a new one for her?
I did. I don't know if I had to, but I did because I felt bad. But anything that at all, Jennifer?
I think you covered everything, man.
And probably and then some. So, Ethan, what's your number 6 favorite Best Picture of all time?
Well, since I was ready to do this list last week.
Have you been messing with it, tweaking?
I tweaked it a little bit today. Mm-hmm. But my number 6 sort of comes in, and I sort of swapped it with number 7 and moved a few things about. My number 6 is the 1971 Best Picture, The French Connection, directed by William Friedkin. Now, William Friedkin's an asshole.
Oh, yeah.
I can't stand that son of a bitch, but I really like The French Connection.
Good movie.
It's a great crime movie. It's obviously the first time that Gene Hackman got an Oscar, and rightfully fucking so.
Oh, yeah.
It's
real good in that movie.
And it's the top
Popeye Doyle?
Popeye Doyle, yep. And it's an iconic movie, cop movie, crime movie from the 70s, where, the big thing everyone remembers is the car chase, is the chasing the elevated
train. And then by today's terms, it's kind of like, okay, they're driving a lot.
They're driving.
And they're driving.
Yeah. Back then,
it was pretty revolutionary.
Amazing. It's still good. Sure. Based on a true story about, it's a drug story. A great fucking movie, Gene Hackman does a great job with Roy Scheider, I think, is in it as well. They come in and they do this. We sort of take this type of movie for granted now with these this cop story. I mean, like American Gangster is pretty much it. Kill the Irishman is pretty much the same
That's
thing.
That's a damn good one, too.
The French Connection, you came in, and really it wasn't a movie that you kind of saw. And Friedkin came in with this documentary film style to it, and really...
It's another film trope that's really being overdone now.
And it was another thing that the 70s was big on, was anti-heroes, and Popeye Doyle was a huge anti-hero. And, Gene Hackman comes out and just kicks ass in his performance, and well-deserved Oscar, and... So, French Connection in 1971 is my number six.
I'm not going to say I left it off my list because I knew that you were going to talk it, because there was lots and lots and lots of these, and I did struggle.
You've seen a hell of a lot more than I have, right? So I've only seen three.
But, but we're also two separate people, two separate sets of tastes, and this is a real good movie, and it's very worthy. It just doesn't happen to hit my list. Did you have that one, Chad?
No, I haven't actually seen the movie.
It's a good movie. Very good movie. You should definitely check it out.
I read great things about it, and I even watch YouTube clips getting ready for the show.
Yeah, it's a real good movie. Real good movie.
It's a very good show.
All right. Well, Chad, what's your number
six? My number six is Sound of Music.
Once again, I left it off my list.
I've never seen it.
It's a good movie. Damn good movie.
It's a great movie. There's great music. Grammy nominee for Best Record of the Year came out of that soundtrack right there.
Mm-hmm. It probably won... Yeah, they had best song then. It probably won best song even.
I will say, getting ready for this list, especially going through the 60s, 70s, and 80s, there are movies that I thought had won one best picture, didn't, stuff like that.
Like what?
Butch Cassidy.
Uh-uh.
Yeah, I know. I could have sworn that was the best picture, but...
There's a lot,
and Sound of Music's another one. I had no idea that it had one.
I was surprised to see it on the list there, and it was 1965.
Yep, 1965. And everybody's seen it. It's a fantastic
movie.
It's
time for a reboot on that. Huh?
That's a movie. Reboot, yeah. It's the movie that got Pauline Kael fired because she destroyed that movie in her review. Pauline Kael, right?
Oh, okay.
The film critic. Mm-hmm. She
called it a big pile of shit.
Oh, it's. I read this interview, this review not too long ago, and it was incendiary. Wow. Just saying like how it attacked like everything that's good in film and movies, because she hates that word film. Hated that. Yeah, but it's a nice, sweet movie, and I think you'd have to have a heart of stone to not like its charm.
I've seen parts of it, but I've never seen the whole thing.
And it. It just, I think if you watched in the right mood with the right crowd, you might like it.
Sure. Oh, I bet I would like it, honestly.
I think you have to watch it when you're a young person, and it sticks with you.
See, well, I'm an old person now.
I was 23 when I first saw it.
Really?
Yep. Obviously, I probably grew up and saw parts of it on TV, and obviously I knew the songs, but, so. Yeah.
I know I've said many a times, I don't like musicals, but I found that that's a lie.
Yeah,
I
musicals. Like,
oh, kick-ass. Musicals can be done really well.
Uh-huh.
Okay. My number six is a movie that it's one of my go-to movies, meaning it's one of those movies that I like to show it to girls that I'm first starting to date, because it shows how deep and smart I am, because I like this artsy-fartsy movie. But screw you, I still like it. It's the Milos Forman Amadeus, 1984 Best Picture winner.
I left it off my list. I was hoping you'd talk about it.
I adore that movie. It's probably, in retrospect, it's maybe a little bit long, but I think that there's a lot of stuff about it that works so well. Like, F. Murray Abraham was genius.
Did you see this for the first time while we were working at the video store?
I saw this in grade school.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I watched that Laserdisc all the time when we worked at the video store. No.
I just remember there was some Oscar winner movie like that you watched while we were working there for the first time, and you were like, fuck, that was good.
So. Yeah, that's actually coming up on my list, and we'll get to that.
I can't remember which one it was.
It'll come up. One of the things that I like about this movie, other than the fact that obviously the music's written by somebody that knows how to write music pretty well, Mozart.
Yeah. I knew one or two things.
There's two things that I love about this movie. Like the quick one is I thought that they portrayed genius really well. And with Tom Hulce's performance of Mozart, it was brilliant. He was also Oscar nominated. He was overshadowed by F. Murray Abraham, and he won.
Yeah, I was going to say F. Murray Abraham won, and he's fantastic
so good
in that movie. And I like how that movie tells the movie from his point of view.
Yeah.
And this is the guy that, he's the essentially the villain of the movie.
It is. He is. And obviously, it's not...
It's an interesting choice to tell the movie from that point of view.
It's not...
based on any form of reality. Salieri was not a schmuck of a musician. He was a very good musician.
Right.
Him and Mozart were friends. They were contemporaries. You know, they
took significant dramatic license.
It was based off a play by Peter Schaeffer. I don't remember his name. It might have been Peter Schaeffer, but somebody wrote a play for it. Mm-hmm. And in the original, in the screenplay, on the stage, I know that Mozart was played by Tim Curry and Ian McKellen played Salieri.
Would have been fantastic.
And I've seen some YouTube clips on it. Nice. It's pretty cool. Wow. Thing I love about that movie, and it's a line that always stuck out. It was Salieri's speech about being the patron saint of mediocrity. How he's talking to God and he says, you know, why do you do this to me? Why do you make me want to praise you with music and not give me the ability? And I feel that way a lot, honestly. You know, because I'm really good at spotting a good movie, but I couldn't make a good movie to save my life, and mm-hmm. it's frustrating. And you know, I've always I love that movie, and it's one of those movies I do like showing people because it's such a good movie. If you can make it through it, I mean it's really long and it gets artsy fartsy.
Oh yeah,
but it's so fucking good. I adore this movie.
I know the first time I saw it, I was pretty much mesmerized by the performances. It's such a good movie. You don't see movies like that come out anymore, and it's an amazing one.
Mm-hmm. No, it's I love it. Have you seen it, Chad? You might like it.
They can't
hear you shake your head on the mic.
I'm ashamed that I haven't seen it. It sounds like a great flick. I'd love to see it.
So good. Mm-hmm. So good, man. So good.
Well, I think that goes without saying for most of the movies on Best Picture.
I was thinking about this today, and I'm hard-pressed to think of many that I would... I will not call Shakespeare in Love a bad movie.
Sure.
I will say it did not deserve to win Best Picture.
Oh, yeah.
There's one or two I would call a bad movie out of this entire list. And off mm-hmm. the top of my head, that's Around the World in 80 Days. I thought that was a shitty movie.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with... No, that's it. That's probably the only one I did not like. But, you know, like, there's some of them that aren't for me. So right.
That's one of them I've actually seen.
What?
Around the World in 80 Days.
I don't like it. It was also the
I saw the Jackie Chan version. I liked that one.
It was all right. That one was fun. Well, it was also the movie that beat out High Noon, and that's unforgivable to me.
Fuck you, then.
Yeah, such
good
movies.
High Noon's another one that I expected to see on the list, but I was it didn't? I knew Citizen Kane didn't win.
It was a miracle.
But, I mean, fuck, you know?
It was a miracle that Gary Cooper won actor mm-hmm. for that movie. Because it was pretty much pro-McCarthy or anti-McCarthyism.
I think it showed up on both yours and mine top 10 Westerns.
I believe it did. It was my number one Western. I loved that movie. What's your number five, Ethan?
Apparently, you got a thing for the 70s.
70s is a good damn decade.
I know. My number five is the 1973 George Roy Hill film, The Sting.
Good music.
I fucking love that movie, man. I mean...
You know what? I don't have I have one film from the 70s on my list.
Well, with The Sting, I mean, you have such a fucking fantastic cast. I mean, Paul Newman and Robert Redford alone.
Yep.
You put those two guys in a movie and you pretty much get my ass in seat. Obviously, you can't do that anymore because you know, Paul Newman is dead.
But, yep.
This movie is them at the peak of their form. I mean, these two guys work so well together and everything they ever did, and then when you put them together in
a
film, it's
kind of like
a
modern
gold.
Day Pitt and Clooney,
something like that. Sure,
but
I wouldn't put Pitt and Clooney on their level, honestly. But
I don't know, man.
They're good. Don't get me wrong, they're good. Pitt and Clooney haven't done something as good as this.
No, shit.
But The Sting is it's a great grifter, con artist, heist film that you have these crooks trying to basically pull a con on another big crook who's Robert Shaw, who is Quint in Jaws. Great movie. Oh my god, it if you like something like Ocean's 11 and that sort of twist after twist
like
after twist, yeah, to an extent. I mean, you have movie if you like those movies that has, you know, the twist upon twist upon twist upon twist, and this is one of those with George Roy Hill, who died a couple years ago, and unfortunately, so you have this great gem of a movie, and I didn't see it until I was a little older, probably in my 20s, and fuck, is it a good one. I highly recommend that anyone and everyone go out and see it. The Sting just has such this lighthearted merriment about the movie, you know, that really don't get in movies anymore. But this movie definitely has this, you know, 1970s Hollywood. We're in the 1970s. In the previous movie I was talking about, French Connection, is a very dark and gritty, you know, 1970s dystopian type of movie. That was big back then. It was, you know, All the President's Men. It was, you know, this type of, oh my God, you know, the government is horrible and we hate them. This movie sort of said, you know, you're going to the movies for an escapism. You're going to the movies for to have a good time. And this movie said, let's just go for it. And it knocked it the fuck out of the park. And I can't tell you how much you need to go see this movie.
It's a good one.
1973
real good one.
Sting. Yeah.
Once again, I didn't put it on my list, but it's a really good one. Chad, what's your number five?
My number five is Gone with the Wind.
That's a good one.
1939. I enjoyed the movie when I saw it. I
1939,
already...
a good year for movies.
Damn good year. Remember the other year like that? Off the top of your head? 94.
Yep, 94, Shawshank and Pulp Fiction. And
Quiz Show.
Fuck.
Forrest Gump. I mean, it was a rough year.
Gone with the Wind? Oh, yeah.
It's not on my list once again, but I love it.
I read the book first, and it is a marathon of a movie. It's like almost 4 hours or something.
Oh, yeah. And it's a movie you more appreciate with age. Because when you're young, you're like, fuck, this is boring. I hate this. Someone shoot me in the face. And then you get older and
this
go,
is classic.
Wow, this is fucking good.
This is classic this is golden classic area Hollywood. Yeah,
you know, Technicolor Hollywood, you know, awesomeness.
And I love the setting. I love the Civil War idea. Mm-hmm. A great piece of Americana.
Oh, yeah. And talk about a movie that affected, you know, pop culture and society.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I thought that was a great movie. Clark Gable, I have watched other movies of his since then.
Clark Gable
just
is a talented actor.
Of the man.
Gable's
himself.
Great. We don't have stars like that anymore.
Not many.
I love Clark Gable. And
Vivian Leigh was
Vivian
incredible.
Leigh, yeah.
We can't talk that year at the Oscars without bringing up Hattie McDaniel.
Yeah.
First
African-American to win an Academy Award.
And
if
you're talking about 10 Could Academy not... Awards that year to that movie.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
And that was just one of them. I mean,
yeah.
They were...
Talk about it. I mean, wow. That movie is definitely if
it's a tour
it's
de force.
One of those movies that just embodies the term cinema classic. You know what I mean? You say name a classic, fantastic, you know, Hollywood classic cinema, and Gone with the Wind is going to come to mind for pretty much everybody.
Yeah, I don't think this is a movie that you can truly look at objectively and tear it apart. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a. I mean, you can if you just want to be a fucking jerk off, but there's just so many great tropes going on in that movie. It's just such a I adore that movie. It is not on my list. I keep saying this is just how amazing this list this body of movies
and
is.
You know, Wizard of Oz came out the same year. Yep. So I mean it's a classic
Stagecoach.
I was thrilled hit Walmart last year and I found a Blu-ray 2-pack for $20 of
Gone
with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz. I was like, fuck
cool.
Yeah, I'm on it.
Cool. Yeah.
And man, the Blu-ray on that is beautiful. Mm-hmm. It is just a gorgeous transfer.
So they really improve on the old picture.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And there's a good DVD set of it out there, too. I mean, there's tons of good.
There's a wonderful Blu-ray set with, like, more than the one you're talking about. Yeah. It's, like, four discs, and it has all that bullshit in a big old box.
Yeah, the one I got at Walmart is not that one.
Yeah, but it's still
a Blu-ray of the movie. Yeah. And we have the big special edition DVD, or Beth does. So, I mean, we're good on that.
Wonderfully fantastic movie. Mm-hmm. Wonderfully fantastic movie. All right.
What's yours, Aaron?
My number five, it's the one that I have from the 70s. Milos Forman again, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, 1975. I adore this movie. It's against my better judgment for some reason, but I still love it. I mean, it's Jack Nicholson at his absolute razor-edge, diamond-cutting...
I will totally agree with you on that. It is unfortunately another... It is one of those movies, though, that just doesn't...
Louise Fletcher was amazing in that movie.
Such a... evil, horrible bitch in that movie.
Scatman Crothers was like the picture of dignity in that movie. You had to feel horrible for Brad Dourif in that movie. Uh-huh. Just such a wonderfully shot movie. Such a wonderfully acted movie.
Often imitated, never equaled.
Yeah,
type of movie.
It's such a good, good, good movie. It's one of the three movies in Academy Award history in 83 years so far that has taken the the top honors of picture, director, actor, actress, and a screenplay. That's only happened three times, and this is one of the times it's happened.
Yeah.
So,
no,
it's a wonderful movie.
It's a good one. It's one of those that doesn't quite click with me.
Mm-hmm.
It is a good movie. Do not get me wrong. I'm not saying it's bad. It's a good movie. I like it, but It's not on my list because
it's in the middle, you know, of the, I don't know, nihilistic 70s, sure, or whatever, oh, yeah, you want to, oh, call, yeah, it. But it was hopeful, and I kind of liked, mm-hmm, that about it. Because, I mean, there's, you know, like The Godfather, yeah, and The Godfather Part 2 and, you know, some of those movies like that. You know, they're wonderful. I like watching them. This is the one that is, you know, it's hopeful in the middle of all that, you know, like that mm-hmm, horrible, mm-hmm, shit going on in films in the 70s.
It is good. It just never quite clicked with me.
I would have never watched this if it wasn't for Jack.
And that's, I'm not sure I would have. But well,
on another level, for me, it is also kind of a question, would I have enjoyed it without Jack? And I don't know the answer to that question. It was good in its own right. I like him.
He's a rash in that movie. I mean, he's in every frame of that movie. He's in every ounce of the nuance of that movie. I mean, this is him at his absolute top of his form, and I love this movie. And
maybe the movie wins nothing if not for him.
I don't, mm-hmm, think so. I think it was because Louise Fletcher was so good in that movie, and I don't think that she was dependent upon him. I mean, she was a force of nature in that movie.
Well, you know, sort of on topic, Louise Fletcher was a villain on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, recurring. I've heard that. I've heard that before.
She was such a
Academy Award winning actress, and now she's doing TV shows of Star Trek. Too bad, but
well, that was in the 90s.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's, you know, I'm trying to
make us feel better.
I'm not apologizing about it, and also not being asked to.
Aaron's always going on about Star Trek. Da 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 da.
Oh yeah,
I was telling you, she was a villain on Deep Space Nine. It was very cool.
Right on. That's very cool. What's your number four, Ethan?
All right.
A movie.
Yes, a movie. I am looking at my top six in here. Look at most of my list. You know how generally you go more classic. Looks like I'm going that way for a majority of what I got here. My number four is the 1943 Michael Curtis film Casablanca.
It's my number three.
It's such a great movie.
It's a wonderful movie.
I mean, talk about... We were just talking, you know, Gone with the Wind and classic Hollywood. This is another classic Hollywood. I mean, it iconic, great characters, actors. It has Claude Rains. Come on.
If I were doing a best, if I were putting these in what I truly feel were the best of these movies, mm-hmm, it would probably top the list. I think, mm-hmm, that it's an incredibly good movie.
It is. And it is such a good movie, especially knowing the time when it came out, you know, it was filmed before the attack on Pearl Harbor and then released afterwards. So I mean, with that in mind, watching that movie it has a lot of things in there that
it's
have
current
a new light.
They're talking about running away from Nazis before we were even engaged with war.
Yeah, well, and Rick Blaine, the Bogart character, mm-hmm, in it is pretty much he's representing America, that he's not getting involved. He's staying out of it, but he is getting involved. I mean, in World War II, we were supplying weapons to the British before we got in.
It's also one of the most famous dark horses at the Oscars. It was not supposed to win.
Sure.
And it's so funny to think of Casablanca as a dark horse, you know?
Yeah. As an average movie. They thought it was such an average movie.
Well,
it was
weird when it came out. I mean, it was just so... Mm-hmm.
And it's my number three as well.
Oh, wow. So
it's a great movie. And it's one of those that it just... you know, perfect storm to this movie is it just had the actors, it had the story, it had the filmmaking.
I do love noir. Claude Rains in that movie.
Yeah, Claude Rains, Humphrey Bogart.
Do you have that DVD?
Yeah, I got.
Blu-ray.
I got the Blu-ray. Yeah.
Have you listened to the Roger Ebert commentary track?
Not yet. No,
it's worth a second viewing just for that alone. Such a good commentary
pop that
track.
And watch that.
It's
then.
Really good.
It's Beth and I's Valentine's Day movie. We watch that every year.
Fantastic movie.
It is. So good. When you sit back and you think about film noir and whatnot, this was one of those movies that instigated that sort of type of genre.
Oh,
and,
sure.
You know, Bogart being such a film icon that he is, because people think, you know, Sam Spade and all that. Yeah, well, Rick. You know, people think Rick, too.
Yeah.
And one of the most iconic... You know, timeless love stories is him, and
it doesn't end well. You know,
no, it well, doesn't.
It actually ends poetically, but you know does. They don't end up together.
And Claude Rains. The reason I bring up Claude Rains is because he's great. He's somewhat the villain of the film.
Kind of.
There really isn't a this is the bad guy. There are people in there who are like these are bad guys.
Yeah.
And of course, at the end of the movie, he. he's a bad guy, but he's not a bad guy, you know? Yeah. And it's, you know, it's, I think this is the start of a beautiful friendship, you know?
Yeah.
And I just want to...
Infinitely quotable movie.
Oh, yeah.
You bring me the usual suspects. Here's looking at you. Can yeah. Play, play as time goes by. I mean, et cetera, et cetera, oh, yeah. et cetera. And play it, Sam. Not it, play it again, Sam.
Yes, play Never it again, Sam. It's a misquoted movie, though. Peter Lorre, very small part in the film.
Memorable
oh,
part.
Yeah, memorable. Well, he's the instigator right there.
And
you
he's
know?
Also, you know that he was taken off and murdered horribly after oh, yeah. they get him.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, when we think Nazis in movies, you mm-hmm. know, we immediately go Indiana Jones, because yeah. Nazis are evil and whatnot. And they are in this, but they're not, you know, like eating babies.
No, they're...
but they're still bad guys.
Uh-huh.
This movie is... I would argue probably along, you know, with Gone with the Wind, it's in that easily in those same categories of if we had to choose if we had to choose a few movies to put in a time capsule, this is definitely one of them.
Oh,
I would
yeah.
put in there for yeah. the for 1,000 years to be opened up so it can be saved.
I
and
believe
shared
this was one of the first films selected for preservation when oh, they yeah. when they did.
It's,
have you seen the colorized version?
I want to talk about that.
Please
for a
do.
Okay. Fuck Ted Turner. Okay. Uh-huh. Ted Turner back in the 80s and 90s went on this whole big kick of colorizing shit.
Pause real well, not pause, but I just want to say I almost brought this up last week with our remakes mm-hmm. because of the lesson we learned from it. But is, I already pulled my bullshit with Psycho.
You
so.
Can easily come in here. Yes, we are film snobs, and we do tend to like Letterboxd films as opposed to
sure.
pan and scan. You know, as we like to watch movies in their original aspect ratio.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people know of, you know, your common people, i.e., you know, regular folks,
uh-huh.
know that there is, you know, you can have full-screen movies, you can have widescreen movies, you can have color movies, you can have black and white movies, but then they go, okay, well, here's the color version of Casablanca. It's finally getting into the public consciousness that, oh, maybe this colorization thing is kind of stupid, we mm-hmm. should watch this. But there is also there are other things that they did to just destroy this fucking movie.
Mm-hmm.
When it's shown on television, I don't know if they've ever fixed it, whatnot. But they speed it up.
Yeah,
they time lapse it more. And so
it feels like a Keystone Cops movie.
And it changes the entire feeling of the movie.
But at that point, I didn't care because they lost so much with colorizing.
Yeah,
it.
Well, not even that. There's a black and white one that's the same way.
Yeah.
I've seen footage side by side, and it's that end scene where she's gotten on the plane and flown off, and they're walking off into the fog and saying, I think this is going to be a start of a beautiful friendship.
Yeah, it just looks
and
silly.
What they do is they speed up the film, and then they resample the audio to make up for the change in speed. And so that scene runs about 30 seconds shorter. It's the same scene. They don't cut anything out, but it just doesn't feel right.
Right.
And it's one of those movies that, you know, I just want to point at and go, this is why we preserve films, mm-hmm. and this is why I want to punch Ted Turner in the dick.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm off my soapbox with that.
Yeah, I mean...
But yeah, Casablanca,
you know what?
Fucking great movie.
Remake it all you want, but leave this one alone.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
is the way I see it.
Do not reboot Casablanca.
You well, I mean...
And there are some movies out there that I think... have that hands-off thing. I think Gone with the Wind and Casablanca.
Gone with the Wind is in development, dude.
Oh, God. I don't think anyone would touch some movies with a 30-foot pole.
I'd hope not.
40-foot pole. 100-foot pole. And I certainly hope this isn't one they ever
well,
go back to remake.
Chad and I's number threes, and we both really agree
no,
with
we're
you.
On number four, yeah.
It's but my it's number four.
It's my number three.
It's my number three.
How do you think to add about it?
It's a great movie.
I
liked it.
I, you know,
I haven't seen all this
I mean,
TV shit.
The only thing
I
we can add is wow.
Yeah,
my thing about this movie is, you know, everything we've said is true. Wonderful, great. You know, stick your awesomitude adjective in here. Mm-hmm. There's flaws in that movie that are just so much
yeah.
fun. Like the fact that the whole movie is about getting the goddamn papers so they can get away. And then when they get on the plane, there's nobody there checking their fucking papers.
Yeah.
So they're just able to leave. And just all kinds of crap like that. But you don't care.
Yeah, I would assume they check their papers on the other end.
Why would they check their papers?
I got nothing. It is still a fucking great
it's
movie.
It's an amazing movie. And that's my point is like these things are so glaring to
proves
me.
Proves the point of like Christopher Nolan. It's like that the movie doesn't have to be perfect for
right.
it to be perfect.
Exactly.
So
and that's where I'm getting at. I am not criticizing. I love this movie. It's my I'd have to no. It's not the only one on my list I own, but it's one of the
few on my list that I actually own. And mm-hmm. It's a great one. Chad, what's your number four?
American Beauty, 1999.
Ethan thought I hated that movie, and I don't.
Yeah, I don't think you liked it.
I hated the Oscars.
Yeah, the Oscars that year were horrible because they went on for like 12 hours.
Yeah, three and a half, four.
That was a good movie.
Real good movie.
It was the best movie that came out that year.
No, it wasn't. That was Elizabeth.
I love Elizabeth. It was the best movie that came out that year. Don't listen to Aaron. But it was not that, for me, it wasn't that great.
I thought it was good. I thought
Spacey was
I was
going to
say Spacey. As my whole theme is, if there's one actor, he can make a whole movie for me. Uh-huh. And Spacey can do that kind of shit for me because
and that
I don't
Bening
even
was
know
just
those.
As good as him in that movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
and she got
she's really
screwed out.
She
of
really
that
gets
Oscar.
Under she gets skipped over a lot. She gets ignored.
Mm-hmm. No, but I thought the way they shot it was real great.
Mm-hmm.
It was artsy fartsy at times.
I don't like Wes Bentley.
I always remember the red door in the rain.
The bag, it's the most beautiful thing I ever filmed.
Well, that's kind of
that's kind
of
hokey.
Those are the parts of the movie that really take it down.
Mm.
Sure. Oh, and not to mention Chris Cooper.
Yeah, he was amazing in it.
I mean, amazing performances all around in the movie.
I like Scott Bakula in that movie as the gay neighbor.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I had forgotten he was in that. I don't think I've seen it since 99.
Conrad Hall, cinematographer in it.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
He was amazing. He was an amazing. Mm-hmm.
Not on my list out of the movies I've seen. It's good, but not one that I, you know.
And my list focuses a lot more on recent movies since it's obviously what I've seen more.
Okay, Ethan. The best pictures, this was of 2000, so, or rather in 2000 of 99, American Beauty was the winner. Cider House Rules, very good movie. Green Mile, very good movie.
Oh, Green Mile.
Yeah. Well, Green Mile was good.
Pause. Yeah. Boom. Insider. Boom! The Sixth Sense. There's some damn good movies out that year.
I'm gonna have to revise my previous statement.
Yeah,
then.
but
and, I like and, The Insider a lot.
I love The Insider. Yeah,
I mean,
I'm not sure if I saw it.
You
before.
Sort of go on about how you know Russell Crowe. He won for Gladiator. He should have won for Insider.
Yeah, that's a very true popular sentiment. I'm not always contrarian. I completely agree with everybody on that one. He should have won for the answer.
Yeah. So forget what I just said about that.
I love American Beauty, though.
American
it's a really
good
movie. Yeah. Real pretty movie.
Yeah. Not the best picture that came out that year.
But that's going to be true a lot of these times. But you know, we're not concerned about the nominees.
Well, you were upset about Saving Private Ryan. Right?
I was. But I was also
fuck you, Shakespeare.
I was also 18 when that movie came out. I was a lot more fiery about that stuff then than now. So cool. What's your number four, Chad? Or I'm sorry.
What's your number four, Aaron?
My number four?
Yes.
Do I have to? Ah, yes.
Apparently you do have to.
I like this movie.
I would expect so. It's your number four.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's a very good point. Fred Zinnemann, 1966, A Man for All Seasons.
I've never seen it.
Wonderful movie. That's the movie. It was the story of Sir Thomas More, starring... who the fuck? Paul Scofield played Sir Thomas More. What's his face? I should be shot. I'm not a movie snob. I don't remember. Robert Shaw played Henry VIII.
Robert Shaw.
Such a incredible movie. It's one of like the hands down best performances I've ever seen in my lifetime. Such a good movie. It's one of those movies that, you know, a lot of times people can, you know, this is one of those movies that if somebody was all like, you know, how do you tell a bad screenplay from a good screenplay? This is where I would start them out at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd say like, you know, listen to this. I watch this movie. Listen to these lines. Look at the way that they're, look at the way that they're delivered. Look at the choices that he made. You know, when he could have done this or could have done that. And it's a wonderful movie. Really wonderfully great, awesome movie, and I cannot stress how much.
I have never seen it.
it's
on the list of movies that you know I need to see
eventually.
You know,
yeah.
Like the man who would
this
be
is
king.
This is one that I feel pretty. You haven't seen Lawrence of Arabia? Jesus, dude. I knew that. I knew that actually though. But this is one of those. You know, like I'll say like I don't know. I don't know if you would like. Some like the artist. I'm still not sure if you like that or not.
Sure.
But I feel pretty confident you'd like this because this is just like the first off. You know, you have a weakness for Robert Shaw. I don't know if you realize that you love the shit out of some Robert Shaw.
I do,
rightfully so because he's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just such. It's one of those movies with tour de force performances. It's a great movie all around. Cannot recommend checking it out more. So, what's your number three?
My number three, still firmly in the 70s. Should be 70s. No surprise to you that it's 1972 Godfather.
No.
Francis Ford Coppola.
Not surprised.
I can't make this list without putting that on there. I adore The Godfather. It is such a great movie. And I, you know, I'm on record. I like it better than the second one. The second one is good.
We argued about this on the crime show, and I like the second one better. But you know, but it makes. But you know, I was thinking about this because I Godfather or Godfather Part Two are not on my list anywhere. But I was actually thinking about it, and it actually makes a lot of sense that Godfather Part Two would be the one I would like more than Part One because what's it do? It goes back in the past. You know, it's the classic movie, and that's what I react to that. And
I left both of them off my list because I do not like either of the movies.
You're weird.
They're all right movies.
They're real good movies.
In the words of Aaron, you have no soul.
Well, I don't like The Big Lebowski very much either.
I could see that, but The Godfather's classic.
I didn't like The Big Lebowski, but I need to watch it again.
Just boring. Grab the Blu-ray when you leave, man. But, you know.
I love The Godfather.
I do, too.
I mean, go back to the crime show to hear me gush and gush and gush about it. It's a great movie. Brando
was...
And I still stand by it. I think the unsung hero of that movie is the unsung because he didn't get a nomination was Al Pacino.
Yeah,
everyone was great. I thought, and Pacino who finally does have finally got an Oscar for Son of a Woman. He's a great actor, and that's a great movie.
Come on, now.
I'm still pissed off. He didn't even get a nomination for this one. I say what you will. I think that. His performance in this movie was just absolutely amazing.
Coppola didn't win director that year.
I don't care about that. Coppola is kind of crazy at this point. So,
but not at that point. He's crazy at this point.
Sure. But I'm talking Pacino. Yeah. I love Pacino in this movie. I think he should have been at least nominated.
I agree. I agree with
you.
If
not winning, he's so good in it.
A real good movie.
But go back to the crime show way back when we were doing that one. So Godfather 72.
Do you have those Blu-rays?
No, I don't. I just have the DVDs.
Do you know if they're any good?
I have no idea.
You know, the first off, the DVDs were incredible. Yeah. They actually had the Oscar acceptance speeches on them, except for the Brando snub. But that always cracked me up.
Yes.
But it's such a fucking amazing. And they even, if I remember right, didn't they do it some way to where you could watch the Godfather Experience, Legacy, whatever.
The Godfather Saga.
Yeah, didn't they?
I think so. I can't remember.
Where it's actually shown chronologically.
I think so, yes. And that was done as a TV miniseries back when. But,
yeah.
Godfather
Part 3 is not as bad as it's made out to be.
No, it's not as good as 1 or 2.
No.
It's not a terrible movie, but when you're lumping it in and comparing it to 1 and 2,
yeah, it's a piece
I can
of
see why people go, eh.
Yeah.
So, you know. But yeah, Godfather 1972. And your guys' number three was Casablanca.
Bringing us on to your number two.
Bringing us on to my number two.
Do you have anything to add that you don't like The Godfather, Chad? Are you deep?
I've tried to get through it many times.
Well, you haven't made it all the way through it?
I swear to God I've gotten at least 2 hours into it.
Well, you need to keep going.
It's over 3 hours long. So.
I always fall asleep.
To me, that movie picks... Okay, I think that movie's got...
I retract my comments that it's a bad movie. It's a movie I can't stay awake for.
Well, that's a bad movie.
I showed it to Beth, and Beth is not like long movies and whatnot, but we watched it, and we wrapped it up. We ended, stopped watching it. We finished watching it at about 11:45 at night.
Mm-hmm.
Her next
bedtime.
Generally, we're sleeping at that point, and she's like... So there's number two, right? I'm like, yes.
Well, she probably has a lot better taste than I do.
They're like, we could watch it.
I think that The Godfather has probably, hands down, one of the greatest opening scenes of any movie ever. Yeah. And I think that it's got a massive slump right there. And then after Sonny dies, that movie is the balls.
The whole scene where Sonny dies, probably my favorite in the film.
Is it on Netflix?
I don't think it is.
No, I've got the DVDs.
Totally there's so many great scenes in it. There's when Vito dies with the oranges. It's a great scene.
And the story behind that one, that scene.
Yeah, you improvise and scare the fuck out of the kid.
Well, and the
oranges
the studio,
are
the studio's story behind that.
What?
The studio didn't want him to film that. The studio told Coppola they didn't want that. They should just hear about Vito's death after the fact. It's like, oh, and he dies. And it's like you see him, you do that, and then later on you're told that he dies.
That's
and Coppola's like, okay, we'll do that. and then talk to Brando when they film that scene anyway.
Yeah, and scare the crap out of the kid. I didn't know that. That's fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that, you know, it's well established, and not even just on the show, just in history and pop culture, that Brando was a jerk off.
Oh, yeah.
And there was some... And he was a money grubbing. I'm not going to call him a money grubbing whore, but he felt that he deserved a certain amount of money.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't involved in the second one. And I think that really helped the final scene in the end of the second one.
Yeah.
I really do, because he felt like a force in nature, you know, because, you know, everything, the scene where they're waiting for him to come home and Michael tells him that he's going off to the army and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they were talking about him the whole time and Brando wasn't there, but you felt him because of the powerful performance in the first one.
Yeah.
Super cool. I mean, maybe check him out sometime, Chad. I'm not saying that everybody should like these. I mean, this isn't like Gone with the Wind. You know, I mean, I could see their detractors on this, but I think they're worthwhile. They're real good.
Yeah.
So, all right, bring us on to Chad's number two.
Well, no,
I'm sorry.
We haven't done my number two yet. We were still talking about...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Still talking about...
You're number two. All right.
All right. My number two is shooting ahead two decades to my... I think I called this my favorite Western, 92 Unforgiven, directed, starring... embodied by Clint Eastwood, Clint fucking Eastwood. Thank you very much.
It's my number nine.
And I'm sure you left it down so because you knew it was going to show up on my list. I can't
correct.
Make this list without talking. Unforgiven.
And I'm going to say that like my and that's yeah. if I wasn't podcasting this list is structured different. If I'm not like you know okay, I agree with Ethan all the way through it.
Sure,
but no, you're absolutely right. I adore every. Have you watched it yet? I gave you.
It's my number seven.
Yeah, it's such so a great good. Movie.
And I did leave it off my top six because
you know how much I love it.
I knew you'd bring it up. Yeah,
and it is one of those movies that we know when I first saw it, I was younger and I fucking hated it, fucking hated this movie.
Yeah,
and then I grew up some more and I watched it again with a new set of eyes. I was like, fuck. That was good.
Man, we've really talked a lot about this movie, though, on this show. But it's such a fantastic movie.
I mean, go back and listen to the Western. Go back, you know, if you're a regular listener of the show, you know how much I fucking adore and worship this fucking movie.
Yeah, such a good movie.
It's brilliant. It's awesome. It's great. It was in 1992. It is, if you don't see this movie, then I will track you down and beat you to death with your own shoes.
Uh-huh.
But it's my number two.
It is. Well, no, never mind. I was about to say, it's the only one that came out in my lifetime, which is so not true. So never mind. Chad, number two.
I hope I'm not stepping on Ethan's toes, because he earlier tonight said he liked this movie. I didn't know he did, but Platoon is my number two.
I didn't know Ethan liked it.
1986.
It's not on my list, but I do like that. It's about one of the only Oliver Stone movies that I do like.
It's one of the only Vietnam movies that I have ever cared for.
Yeah,
I like Casualties of War with Sean Penn and Michael J. Fox.
I haven't seen that one.
It's okay.
One of the best Tom Berenger roles ever.
Oh, yeah. And it is.
That'd be a short list.
Oliver Stone.
Yeah, Oliver
Platoon,
Stone.
Platoon.
Dark Knight? I'm sorry, Inception. Excuse me, Inception.
Yeah, Inception.
Wasn't he in Major League with Charlie
Major
Sheen?
League,
Major League.
Oh, yeah. So you got to give him props for that.
Hey, I like Major League.
I like Major League, too.
I watched this movie because Charlie Sheen. Yeah. I am so drawn to people and actors, and I thought, holy shit.
This was
shit.
Before he was
Charlie
this,
fucking crazy
he
Sheen.
He was 20 or something. He was
before
very
he was winning.
Yeah.
And had the tiger blood.
But then Charlie Sheen and Tom Berenger, I had seen Major League long before this movie, and I thought that's, and I knew it was the same dudes, and I watched it, and it wasn't what I was expecting. But it
was good.
And it's not to knock it, but it's
really cynical. Such
oh,
a
yeah.
but the
well,
Vietnam War sucked.
It's also an Oliver Stone movie. So hey, cynical and Oliver Stone, that never happens.
No.
Well, and my problem with most Vietnam movies are they are very dark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a disgusting war.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It was very awful, and usually it's depicted that way in a classless style, and I feel like this was almost passable.
This was a beautiful oil spill, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it was such a horrible, horrible thing was going on. And Oliver Stone was in Vietnam. I mean, and he transferred that into the
and
screenplay.
We can't mention the movie without Willem Dafoe.
No.
I mean, the
cover shot of him getting shot was in just, you know, it's iconic.
And that sort of coined the term, he got platooned.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
yeah.
And that's just such a great That's a great movie.
It is.
I totally
haven't seen it in probably a decade, but I did really like it.
I will admit it doesn't deserve number two on this list, but it deserves number two on my list.
It does. You know what? It deserves
of the ones you've seen.
I totally get you. I totally feel in you here. My number two, Ethan. What have I done? 1946. I'm sorry, 47. I don't know, but it's The Bridge of the River Kwai. That's the movie that I discovered at Miracle Video and watched and fell the fuck in love with.
Wow.
That's such an amazing
movie. And I like that
movie.
It is not on my list, but it is a good fucking movie.
It's one of those movies I tracked down because it has Obi-Wan Kenobi in it, but fuck Obi-Wan Kenobi.
It's what he won a fucking Oscar for,
that movie's got Colonel Nicholson in it. Fuck Obi-Wan Kenobi. Such a fantastic movie. We're talking war movies. This is up there with the best of them.
Have you guys noticed how many war movies there were on this list?
A lot.
Between World War I, World War II, Vietnam War... There was a lot of war movies on the list, and I don't know if that's how all movies are, but...
Well, none of mine are war movies.
Well, a couple of mine are war movies, but this is a good one.
Civil War, even.
Well, hell, dude.
Casablanca, you just said that's...
That's a war movie.
Everything in these movies... there's so much war in these movies.
2008 was The Hurt Locker. It was about the Iraq War.
There you go. So,
you got all the American wars in there, so... And then some... But
Bridge of the River Kwai. I don't think there was ever one for the first Iraq War, though.
Well, the Jarhead.
Oh, really?
And Three Kings.
Did it even get nominated? Well, I know there are movies, but I'm talking Oscar movies.
Big Lebowski.
hey.
There you go. I love Bridge of the River Kwai. It's one of those movies that I don't know if it was this movie for his network, another huge set of omission that should be on this list would offset my list entirely because I love Network. But did I say Inception? Well, Network, at any rate. One of those movies that made me realize that I love William Holden. He's such a fantastic actor, such a good actor in that one. Mm-hmm. It's one of those movies where, you know, I'm a big fan of characters that are, you know, the utmost picture of dignity and compassion.
And that's
Alec Guinness.
Oh, yeah. And that's one movie I found out, you know, came out in what you said, 47?
Something like that.
58? Okay.
I read the wrong thing. It was 58.
58. Okay. And that's earlier than I thought it would be, even. 47's way, you know, I was going to say, fuck, you know.
Yeah, that was World War II, dude.
58 is still pretty early for a movie like that. And, yeah, you know, William Holden, fucking great cast in that movie.
Sure was. I can't remember, and I feel horrible about it, but I can't remember the name of the guy that won the guy that played the... Commandant of the camp, the Japanese guy, and he was so good in that movie. Just an all around fantastic movie. It's like one of those movies that doesn't have. I mean, I don't know. Do you call that a happy ending? It's tough. I mean, it doesn't have a Chinatown ending, and it doesn't have.
Oh yeah, no, it's not the best. An ending is Chinatown,
and it's not an ending like you know that I Am Legend. I mean, it's somewhere in between because. You know, there's some serious prices paid for, you know, for what happens, but ultimately the right thing happens in the movie. This isn't how it went down in real life at all. I know that there was talks of lawsuits against the companies, and this was David Lean by
Colonel Saito.
Yes,
was played by
Tensu
Sisui Hayakawa.
There you go. He was so good in that movie. So good in that movie, but. I don't know. I adore this movie. I love this movie. I probably haven't seen it in 5 years. I did have that nifty two-disc special edition DVD that was out for a while, and it was removed from my custody. And it's one that I do look forward to getting kind of on Blu-ray, although I was reading on the digital bits last night about the Blu-ray, and I guess the Blu-ray sucks. It's one of those movies that shouldn't have a high def, you know, because you can see like strings and shit on the bridge models and stuff like
that.
That's
too bad.
But I do really like this movie, and so it's my number two.
It is a fantastic fucking movie.
Yep.
Aaron, what movie have I not mentioned that can you even begin to think was my number one? All right.
Is it the you already talked to Sting? No.
This surprised even me.
Okay.
While I was making this list, and I recently just rewatched this movie. It's 2007, No Country for Old Men.
Oh, wow, yeah? That's my number something.
Fuck, I watched this, you know, when I first saw it, it was the year it came out, and I got the DVD and watched it. It was like, yeah, it was really good.
It's my number seven. And I left it that high.
I want to say it's because of the show that I went back and watched it again.
Isn't it amazing?
And went, fuck, that was really goddamn good.
I should watch that again.
And so it reached my number one that way. Because goddamn, it's really good. I mean,
isn't it?
I mean, I'm sitting there watching this movie, and I'm just transfixed by it. I'm mesmerized by the performances, and the Coen brothers, I've said, are hit and miss with me before, but this movie is spot fucking on. You have
home run. I mean,
and, you know, it's like in Silence of the Lambs, you are watching, you're watching Anthony Hopkins
Hannibal Lecter.
As Hannibal Lecter, and you're just like, fuck. Uh-huh. This movie, you're watching Javier Bardem.
Yeah.
His performance is like a performance for the ages.
Yeah, it is. It's movie. So good.
It's just mind-bogglingly amazing.
It's this close to overshadowing everybody in that movie, but because they were so fucking good, it doesn't.
Everyone's fucking good, but his character fits that way.
Oh, yeah.
Because the character is so overshadowing.
Well, I mean,
it's because he's a force of nature. It's this, you know.
You look at the DVD cover, and he's like a big dude up on the, you know, he's in the sky, you know, above everyone.
And
so
that's the perfect metaphor. That's the perfect image for this film. It is brilliant, and it is the only one I have on here. It's one of the only ones I have on here that is within the last decade.
Yeah, it's the only one within the last decade for me.
Well, we'll continue talking about this. I picked, obviously, the last 20, 25 years is all I've seen, so my list has been very current, and I wrote my list down, and I put suggestions by it for the numberings, and I've been shuffling them all about, but there's one movie I was sure about, and my number one is also No Country for Old Men.
Goddamn good movie.
It made me love the Coen brothers.
You know why I left all it off? Shit.
Well, before
We've
this, for me,
the
it was
fuck out of it. Yeah. That's why I left. And I also,
yeah. Oh, but it's so
I genuinely love my number one. I like it more than this movie.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's, you know, the Coen brothers, for me, it's like they're epitomized by Fargo. Fargo being one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Great movie. And then I went back and I watched this movie because of doing the show. And
Christopher sells the shit out of that movie, doesn't he?
It is such a good movie. Yep. It is just so amazing. It really is. I've never read the book. I don't know if I even want to at this point, with just the movie just being such a perfect gem for me.
I was taken aback in 2007 when I saw it in the theaters. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as it went out on DVD, I got it.
Oh, yeah.
And ever since I first saw it, I just thought, and it's only gotten better every time I watch it. Like,
you know, I think a good movie is one you can.
It's impeccable
that you can watch again and again and get more from and analyze it. And this is one of those movies that you can just sit there and dissect. You could teach classes. You could go to classes on this movie. It is so good.
I will say this is probably the best picture winner that I've seen the most. I literally probably watch this movie once a month, and I need to get it on Blu-ray. I don't know why I don't have it on Blu-ray.
It's $8 at Best Buy.
Best Buy's closed. I should go tomorrow.
And that's the regular price.
Really? Cool.
$7.99.
Is it a good Blu-ray?
Yeah, it's
the DVD.
It's the Blu-ray, you know, and Clerks is also $7.99 regular price.
That one I'll wait for the 20-year edition, but
it's the 15th. No. It's got all the stuff from the 10 on it, but
I think this is a masterwork.
Oh, yeah.
And we did our Coen Brothers show, and I sucked their dicks for an hour and a half solid, and I think this tops it. I mean, this is so good. I mean, I said it on my show, I think I topped off with, I think I said Hudsucker Proxy is my favorite Coen Brothers movie. Mm-hmm. I was trying to build it up. You know, I was just like, you guys need to look at this movie. It's a good movie. But
I've seen Hudsucker. Yeah.
And I think that No Country for Old Men is probably my favorite Coen Brothers movie.
It's such so good.
A fucking wonderful, great movie.
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou is mine.
It's a good movie. That was Ethan's another number one. So.
And, that is a good fucking movie. No Country for Old Men led me to that. Obviously, it's been years, and I hadn't watched it yet. I'd heard good things about it, and I actually went to watch that just because of the Coen Brothers. And I've seen all their stuff good. Now.
I saw No Country for Old Men. Like I think it came out around Christmas or something like that when it came out.
It was wintertime.
When it came out, I saw it, and I was just all like, wow. I was just like, I walked out of this movie being just, like, I was just hypnotized. And then it kept going. Then, you know, boom, Golden Globes happened. I'm like, right on. Then boom, Oscar nominations happened. And I'm all like, okay, yep, I don't think it's going to win. I don't care. I just like this movie so much. And I went and saw it like Oscar night afternoon. Mm-hmm. And I was just all, it was just such a good year because mm-hmm. of that. Because it's just, I can always remember I saw No Country for Old Men for the second time. And, you know, you just get that extra layer added to a Coen Brothers movie the second time you see it. And I saw, you know, it felt justified how much I loved it because, you know, the Academy awarded it. And it was cool. I love that movie. Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful movie.
Yep.
So I am very surprised that you're number one. I didn't think. I mean, I knew you liked it, but I didn't think it would. I figured you'd top your list with Unforgiven.
Unforgiven. Yeah.
But what? And also, I kind of didn't think you would because that's really expected of you. And so,
And I can honestly say, No Country for Old Men, it made it on there. Honestly, it's.
Yeah.
I was just doing the list and ordering it and going like, man, I really fucking like that.
This is one that I actually did have. I did have Rock Solid. I almost always, you know, leave my list fluid. You know, as I go through it, this is one that I actually have the numbers written down and it's in order. And yeah, I'm pretty solid with it. I am happy with it. You know, I like Moving Away from Fanfare, number one. 1946, The Best Years of Our Lives. I don't think you've seen it, right?
Nope, I haven't.
You haven't seen it, right? I want you guys to see this movie and I want the listeners to see this movie. This is a movie that is in the vein of Platoon. But based off of World War II, but it's actually when these folks get home from the war. It was, oh, God damn it, I suck. Frederick March playing I don't remember the name of the character, but he's the lead character and won an Oscar for it. Very, very much deservedly so. We talked about Harold, is it Harold Lloyd? No, it's not Harold Lloyd. the army guy that lost both of his hands, Harold Russell. He lost both mm-hmm. of his hands in a real army accident, and the director was found him, brought him on as a technical advisor, and because I think that the army hooked him up with this guy because, you know, he lost both his hands and they trained him and stuff. But he's also just like a really charismatic dude. And so they brought him on. And, you know, this movie was something else when it came out. It was like one of those event pictures and everyone was going to go see it. And they end up sticking Harold Lloyd in the movie because he's just such a charismatic, wonderful person. And he was part of like the press junkets of it. So, you know, he was always out on the, you know, given the interviews and stuff, and you know he had the two hook hands, and he would do all those incredible things with the movies, and he was like, you know, the picture or the face of that movie. He was you know the public's perception of the movie, and the Academy said, well, yeah, we're gonna throw him a bone and nominate him, but he ain't gonna fucking win. So they created a special award for him, and he it was like, you know, for being a for being an inspiration in wartime and being a, you know, a great dude on the set of this movie and mm-hmm. got special Oscar. Come time to hand out the best supporting actor, and he won that as well. First time, only time an actor's won more than one Oscar for a single role in a single movie. Mm-hmm. So, and he's very much deserving. Such a fantastic performance. It's an out of place movie because it's set when the three main characters are from the same town. They come home from their tour duties in World War II, and it's got. I keep saying Frederick March was so fucking good in that. He won an Oscar for it, deserved the Oscar, but I just always feel more compelled to talk about Harold Russell in that movie because he was really fucking good too. They come home from war, and there's just this sense of everything's the same, but everything's changed. You know, because they went to war. I know that I'm completely leaving out the third character because I don't even remember the actor who played it, but I did really enjoy that character as well. He was kind of your, I don't know, maybe your working stiff. Like he worked at a men's store. Or no, he worked at a soda fountain before the war, and he came back and they wouldn't give him his job back. And Frederick March was a bank president. And he came back and he got his job back and he started getting in trouble with, you know, his bosses because he gave a loan to somebody that had a house loan. He was a former soldier and he gave it to him just like kind of on a, like a camaraderie kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there were scenes in this movie that were really, really out of place, like a 1946 movie. You know, there's a scene in like a soda fountain where what's where the character, Harold Russell character, the guy without the hands, is. That sounds so weird. The guy without the hands, but he's in a store. He's somewhere in public, and he's wearing a button. It's like a American flag button, and he puts it on, and he's kind of having a nice little chat with the guy, and the guy just says something along the lines of, "And it was all for nothing." You know, you're such a nice kid, and you lost your hands, and it was all for nothing. And, you know, he is a, like, this Harold Russell character is, you know, he's a good straight-laced dude. But, like the third guy I was telling you about, the guy that worked at the soda fountain or whatever, you know, he just got all bent out of shape and started yelling and screaming at him. And this is really, I mean, think about that. 1947, and this is a movie that is, and it's a popular movie that's denouncing America's involvement in this war. Or on top of that, it was also... It was also attacking the popular sentiment that, oh, we shouldn't be in the war because war is bad, right? Because, you know, it's popular to say war is bad. But there's also some really genuine moments of heartbreakingly funny stuff. I remember a scene where the father comes home, like the Frederick March character comes home, and he plays a surprise on his, you know, he's got a wife, a grown daughter, I think she's early 20s, something like that, and then like a teenage son, and he comes home to surprise them, doesn't tell him he's coming home, and they're genuinely surprised to see him, but it isn't like a Hallmark card. You know, it's like, oh, hey, wow, it's so great to see you, I'm so glad you're here, I need to finish, you know, balancing the checkbook. And he brings home a war souvenir for his son. It's a like, I think he has a flag and a sword and some stuff like that, and he gives it to his son, and I don't even remember if it's ever expressed in the film or the movie, but he's, the son's kind of critical of the war but proud of his father, and he, you know, he gives him the sword and the flag and like whatever, and there's just this weird little throwaway line that I don't think anybody reacts to except for me, and he's like, well, thanks for the stuff, Dad, and he just kind of walks off, and it's really funny. Him and the blue-collar worker guy and the Harold Russell character and his daughter all go out for a drink that night and get just, like, wasted fucking drunk in a 1946 movie. I mean, it's just such a it's such a heartwarmingly wonderful, fun movie. I really – this is one of, like, the ones I really want – I want to pretend that hundreds of thousands of people are going to listen to this podcast, and if they see one list – one movie on my list, it would be the best years of our lives. I think I talked about it on Noir. Because, I mean, it does kind of have, like, that feeling of...
You did talk about it somewhere.
Yeah, because I adore everything about this movie. It's a movie that I... It doesn't have a decent... It's not on Blu-ray, and it doesn't even have a decent edition on DVD. And it sucks, but it's worth buying a shitty DVD of it, because it's just so good. I mean, it's my favorite Best Picture winner ever, without a doubt. Nice. So, I guess that... you guys haven't seen it, so you have nothing to add, but...
Nope.
Do see it. Absolutely do see it. So at this point, we're going to run this down and call us done.
Nope.
Ethan, what's your list look like?
Well, my number 10 is Braveheart. Number 9, Silence of the Lambs. Number 8, surprisingly, was The King's Speech.
I did like that movie, but I want to get further away from it before I start looking at it like that.
My number 7 is Gladiator. Number 6 is The French Connection. Number 5, The Sting. Number 4, Casablanca. Number 3, The Godfather. Number 2, Unforgiven. And number 1, No Country for Old Men.
Excellent. Chad Burt.
I'll start with number 10, Lawrence of Arabia.
Great movie.
Let's start throwing things around here. Number 9, Forrest Gump.
I like Forrest
number
Gump.
Number 8,
a lot.
Patton. Patton's 1970. I really like that movie.
Oh, wow. That almost didn't make our list. That's crazy.
What, Patton?
I thought, actually, you know, come to think of it, I thought Patton was going to be on your list somewhere.
No, it's good.
It's great. I love that movie.
Number 6, The Sound of Music. Number 5, Gone with the Wind. Number 3, Casablanca. Number 3, Casablanca.
Yeah.
Number 2, was that American Beauty? Number 2 is Platoon.
Yeah. Number 3 was number 4 was Casablanca. I'm sorry,
number 4 was American Beauty.
Number three was Casablanca. Number 2 was Platoon.
And then No Country for Old Men.
Yep. Number 10, Silence of the Lambs. Number 9 is Unforgiven. Number 8 is Schindler's List. Have you still not seen that?
Nope.
It's a tough one, but it's such a wonderful film.
I know.
Wonderful in that horrible way.
I don't think it's on Blu-ray. No, it's not.
There's an amazing edition on DVD, though. Yeah. Such a good edition, though.
I guess Spielberg doesn't done the whole Blu-ray thing much.
Well, he's been busy making War Horse movies. Mm-hmm. And Tintin. Number 7 was No Country for Old Men. And then the list we talked in length about. Amadeus, One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest, A Man for All Seasons, Casablanca, Bridge of the River Kwai, and my number one favorite, best picture of all time, is The Best Years of Our Lives. So, that is going to bring it into our discussion about the best of the best, our favorite of the best picture winners of the Academy Awards. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with our outro section. And we are back. We just had our discussion about best picture winners of all time. Mm-hmm. Damn good movies on this list.
Oh, yeah.
Damn good movies on this list. I mean, the Academy might not always get it right, but they always get close.
Yeah.
And that's saying something. So, very good. Excellent. But that is the end of this show. Thank you very much for being on, Chad.
Hey, thank you, guys.
Fun talking with you. We will get you back maybe for some Hong Kong action or something like that sometime. Yeah. That'd be pretty cool. But... I don't know if it's in spirit of the award season or if it has anything to do with it, but we've got a couple of things going on our website. Quickly, Zone of Ruthoz is back.
Yep, Ruthoz is back.
Kicking and screaming, pulling,
and
scratching at the
wall.
You all
need to go vote for Harrison Ford.
And you all need to go vote. Then there's some other people who are nominated,
too. Yeah, but I'm campaigning actively for Harrison Ford.
Yes.
So,
this is one that I have not chosen a nominee in because I won with my choice last time.
In the sixth round.
So therefore, since I write the rules, I can change the rules. Last winner doesn't have to pick next time, and they get a host the festivities on their.
They moderate.
They get to do all that fun stuff. But Ethan's nomination was Harrison Ford.
Yep.
You might know him from a few movies that he's done in the
one
past.
One or two. Yeah.
Namely Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones, Han Solo, Decker. Fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. If you don't know who he is, I have no idea why you're listening to this show.
You've been living under a rock for ever.
And after that, I believe Chris's choice was Nathan Fillion. The modern-day Harrison Ford light.
I'd call him more Bruce Campbell than anything else. But I do love Nathan Fillion.
I do, too. He's a good
dude. Feel that Harrison Ford needs recognition before Nathan Fillion.
Sure.
Respect your elders.
I do love me some Harrison Ford. I do like me some Nathan Fillion. I've been aware of who Harrison Ford is a lot longer than Nathan Fillion, mainly because he's been around longer, but hey. And then John goes with a typical John choice of Bill Murray, who...
Yep.
If I think anybody has a good, solid chance of upsetting Harrison Ford, it's Bill Murray.
I don't like Bill Murray much. So
I like Bill Murray a lot.
I think he's an asshole.
I think he's a dickhead, but I do like a lot of stuff he's done. But a lot of people feel really strongly about him.
Yeah.
And positively, and they can probably... But, I like Bill Murray, and we'll see what happens. And then in an uncharacteristic move of Paul, he picks somebody we've all heard of.
I know.
Showrunner, producer, writer, Stephen Moffat, known for his... Well, known specifically for me, the Doctor Who series and
Sherlock.
Mm-hmm. And apparently he's attached to Tintin. I haven't seen Tintin, so I have nothing to say about it, but very cool. So I don't know when we're going to... When are we going to do that? Oscar night?
You wrote the rules.
Sure, now, so. Oscar night. We'll
run it for a couple weeks.
So it'll be Oscar night, same night that we name off our next thing. This is your baby, so you can explain this one to us.
All right. I was driving home the other night and had this idea of the movie Pop Culture Showdown and making it an annual thing.
It was fun drafting for that, by the way.
Yeah. Well, we drafted up a list of over 50 movie icons with a few iconic movie characters, heroes, or villains, with a few rules we put in place saying no comic book movie for the reasons of just
no origination on television.
Yeah, no origination on TV, things like that, and one character per movie or series. And so we drafted up a big list, and we had, Buckaroo Banzai, Jules Winfield, and all these people on this list. And then I randomly shot it through a randomizer and picked out 32 names. And pitted them against each other. We're going to have five.
Did you pit them against each other? Or was that the randomizer doing
it? It was the randomizer. I just did the
There's
first two, the
damn
second
good
two.
Good ones on there.
Yeah, it was entire randomized. Took the first 32 names, and then the
was it?
One and two were paired, three and four, four and five, and that's all I did.
That's well, then, is it round one or round two that was Indiana Jones versus James Bond?
It's round one.
I mean, that's a heavy first round.
What's going to happen, and I'm not sure exactly if we're just going to keep this bracketed, so like the winner of one and two is going to fight the winner of three and four. I don't know how you want to do that, or we want to randomize it again.
I don't know.
But
let's do it all random. That makes sense to me.
That's fine with me.
But I don't care.
We'll figure it out. But what we're doing is five rounds. We're going to announce the winners on the show. We'll take voting on the website. That's confessionsofamoviesnob.com. You can go vote on the first
round. Is this
something
that will be always visible? Because I know that right now it's the top post, but you
know, not anymore. The Ruth Oz is
okay.
Not the
well,
post,
so maybe we ought to make it more visible somehow. But we'll work on that.
I could sticky it and put it up at the top.
There you go, sticky it.
But what is essentially what it is you have these pairings, and you go on and vote. You can vote right now through midnight on Sunday the 29th for the first round, and then it's
Are we not naming off a round tonight?
No.
I thought we were.
Next show we'll name off the winners of the first round, and then because that'll be also when we cast our votes and our guest will cast their vote.
Okay.
But anyway, in the first round, we're going to do that up through Oscar night, where we will name off the ultimate winner, and then yep. We'll do this each year with the next random grouping. And I'm sure we'll add to the list as we go. Because yep. You know what? We were going through the list, and I added some more as they came to me, like Snake Plissken and mm-hmm. Indigo Montoya and stuff like that. I was like, oh, we got to put them on there. And Rambo. Yep. We can't believe we didn't think of Rambo.
We had Rocky, same thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Rambo with
and
Mad Rocky with a gun.
I added Mad Mardigan, too. I was
yeah,
like,
I noticed.
How did I forget?
You spelled it wrong, but you have it.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, the first round sees the following pairings. We got Jules Winfield from Pulp Fiction versus The Man with No Name from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, A Few Dollars More.
I'd go see that movie.
Yeah, I would too. The second match is, again, random. I did not do this on purpose. James Bond versus Indiana Jones.
That's a matchup if there ever was.
I, of course,
one.
Had to choose a picture of Sean Connery James Bond just to make that appropriate.
Yeah.
The next one is Rick Blaine from Casablanca versus Norman Bates from Psycho. Alrighty. Then we got the Predator from Predator versus Celine from Underworld.
I'd see that. I could see that. I wouldn't see that movie, but I could see that happening.
Sure. We've got Cobra from the Stallone film Cobra versus Colonel Hans Landa from Inglourious Bastards.
Fuck yeah.
We've got Dirty Harry Callahan versus none other than Tron himself.
Clap.
We've got Corbin Dallas from The Fifth Element versus King of Pain, Ash, from The Evil Dead.
That sounds like a real movie.
We've got Gabriel Van Helsing from Van Helsing versus Jack Burton in Big Trouble in Little China.
Lots of Ruth Oz winners.
Pork Chop Express right there. Yeah. We've got Jay and Silent Bob. Yes, they are one pop culture entity versus Tyler Durden from Fight Club.
Once again, I can see that movie.
We've got Flash Gordon from the 1980 Flash Gordon film versus RoboCop. Still going with the Peter Weller thing. Again, randomized. Yep. Buckaroo Banzai himself versus Zorro.
Wow. Great matchup.
Alice from Resident Evil films versus Bub from Day of the Dead.
Wow, how much does that work out? How much does that one work
out? I know, that's what I was thinking. And then we were talking in this movie... Anton Chigga from No Country for Old Men.
Sugar.
Sure. Versus Hannibal Lecter, Silence of the Lambs.
Ooh.
I know. Totally random. I saw that one. Was like, oh, shit.
Going down.
Damn, that's a tough one. And then Robbie the Robot from Forbidden Planet versus Kikuruchio from The Seven Samurai. Maximus Decimus Meridius from Gladiator versus Seth Gecko from Dust Till Dawn.
Once again, I love that movie.
And then the final match in the first round is Riddick from Pitch Black and The Chronicles of Riddick versus Hans Gruber from Die Hard.
Cheesy, so. Cheesy matchup there.
I know.
I don't think that...
I'm looking forward to seeing how this pans out. I think it's going to be fun. So please go and vote.
Please do.
Until Sunday at midnight, and then come back and vote. Keep voting in the and tuning into the show to see who wins.
Yeah, I will absolutely have this crap up on... I'm going to edit it tonight and have it out by morning so yeah. we can get as much airtime out as this. But Chad, you need to go and vote.
Yes, you do. And it's the movie Pop Culture Showdown.
Pow. I like to see... I do know that all the Bagnet Board boys have voted already. So
excellent, excellent. But vote early, vote often, go in and get that done. And also vote for Ruth Oz, yes.
Yeah, do vote for Ruth Oz. And vote whoever you want to, not
Harrison Ford.
Yeah, not just Harrison Ford. But vote for whoever you want to. It's always fun, and I can see Harrison fucking Ford.
Easily.
Or even just fucking Harrison Ford kind of rolls off the tongue a little nicer. Uh-huh. We'll see what happens.
But yeah, first annual Movie Pop Culture Showdown. Go vote. And vote now.
Yeah, very good. Very good. It's been a good show. I can't wait for the Oscars.
No, neither can I.
I can't wait for the Oscars next year, though. Yeah, or in the year after that. I love the Oscars. One of my favorite things that happens annually. Fuck the Super Bowl. I want to see the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you once again for being on, Chad. It was fun having you on, finally. It only took us 76 episodes, but we got you on.
They eased me into it.
They eased you into it. Just, that's what she said.
Oh.
Ooh, my.
Oh, my. Very decaying.
I think that brings us into our little show.
That puts a fork in this bitch.